I haven't found many people that do Old Testament teaching or preaching a lot, because it is more difficult. But Tim Keller is one, and I encourage you to possibly, if you want to know more about that, listen to some of his sermons. You won't go wrong there. One of the metaphors that he actually uses that I will pick up on today in this lecture. So some of the thoughts that he has on this passage, I have basically emulated here. So what do we have that we have not received? But I want to give proper credit to where credit is due. There'll be one metaphor in particular that I found very helpful, resonating with me in this lecture. And this lecture is coming out of the overflow of my heart right now and the things that I've been learning. And it's just kind of one that I have been learning more and more about. So living in light of Christ's righteousness, let's go to Philippians chapter 3. It's on your notes there. Finally, my brethren, rejoice in the Lord. To write the same things to you is no trouble for me, but is safe for you. Look out for the dogs, look out for the evildoers, look out for those who mutilate the flesh. For we are the circumcision who worship by the Spirit of God and glory in Christ Jesus and put no confidence in the flesh. Though I myself, and this is really where I want to get to the heart of what we're talking about, though I myself have reason for confidence in the flesh also, if anyone else thinks he has reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a persecutor of the church, as to the righteousness under the law, I was blameless. All right, let me stop here for just a moment. I'll finish. Righteousness. Let's have a small conversation about even the term righteousness for a second. God came down to the people of Israel. Let me kind of, since speaking of Old Testament, okay, so Exodus. Exodus chapter 19, where it says, I bore you out of Egypt on eagle's wings, O Israel. What did Israel contribute to her salvation? Nothing. Israel contributed nothing to her own deliverance out of Egypt. So far, so good? Okay, so then Exodus, it goes on to say that, if you will obey my commandments, you will be my special treasure, my special possession. You will be for me a kingdom of priests, okay, and a holy nation. Now the New Testament picks that up as well, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. What God was doing there is this. I have bestowed my love on you, Israel, free of charge. I have redeemed you by my grace and brought you out of slavery. And right now, I'm entering into a covenant relationship with you, a marriage, so to speak. I have loved you. And now, as any spouse would return the favor of love, okay, now you people, O Israel, you are to learn to love me. Okay, I have loved you, you love me, based upon the grace that I have poured out on you, and you are to be to me a kingdom of priests. What do priests do? I think Jocelyn mentioned this also about a theology of what is our purpose in life. Did she say something about the visible representation of the invisible God? Did she say something like that? Kingdom of priests, what do priests do? They represent God. So when the nations would look at Israel, they were supposed to see, well, okay, even before that, you are to be a kingdom of priests. You are to represent me. And how do I represent my God? I learn to love what he loves. I learn to value what he values. I learn how he wants to handle sex. I learn how he wants to handle money. I learn how he wants to handle power. I learn how he wants to handle relationships. So that when the nations around Israel look at Israel, kingdom of priests, they see what? They see what? They see God. Okay, so the imagery, God comes down. He has redeemed them to be a special people. And now, covenant relationship, you learn what I value. And what comes next after Exodus 19? Exodus 19. Exodus 20. Okay, got that. 10 commandments. What are the 10 commandments? Don't list them. What do they represent? Love God, love your neighbor. It's God's manifestation of, here's what I love. I love you being faithful to me, commandment number one. I love you treating your parents right. I love you not envying your neighbor's possessions. I love you not stealing your neighbor's possessions. I love these things. So the Ten Commandments were representation of love God, love others. They were representation of God's righteousness. Okay? What he wanted his new spouse, Israel, to be. Right after the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 21 through 24, these are applications of the Ten Commandments in everyday life. For example, in Exodus chapter 21, verse 1, it starts with, here is how you treat your slaves, O Israel. So the very first application of love your neighbor kind of thing, the very first application in Exodus 21, verse 1, is here's how you treat your slave. Why would that be the first thing? The first application in their cultural context, here's how to treat your slave. Why do you think God put that on their hearts and say, this is the first application of how to treat your slaves, Israel? They were slaves. Do not treat your slaves like you have been treated. You treat them differently. You treat them like good employees. You treat them differently. So they had been slaves for many, many years. Now, the way you learn to love your neighbor is treat your slaves differently. You can read about that. But 21 through 24 is all about applications of love God, love your neighbor in that cultural context. Okay, then chapters 25, God gives them instructions on how heaven meets earth once again in the temple so that he can dwell with them. He can be their lover. They can be his lover. And the world may know that God is in their midst as they demonstrate his values to the world, righteousness. Now, the Old Testament law contained 613 commandments. 613 commandments, as people have counted them, I have not. 613 commandments of righteousness. Here's a question for you. Can 613 commandments contain the fullness of God's righteousness? No, it can't. You can't. So there was another mountain one day that God came to, so not Mount Sinai, and he also explained what righteousness was. Does anybody remember the other mount that God came down to? Sermon on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount. He went to the Sermon on the Mount, and what did he? He went to the mount, and he preached the sermon there. What was the sermon? What was the sermon about? Does anybody remember? It was about the Beatitudes. What are the Beatitudes about? Okay, the Sermon on the Mount is not a gospel message at all. It's not. It's not about the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ because he's still alive. He hasn't died. He hasn't been resurrected yet. It's not about the gospel. The Sermon on the Mount is about what true righteousness is. True righteousness. You say, Brent, how do you know that? It's because let me just rehearse a few verses for you. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Unless your blank surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees. Unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees. Blessed are you who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. Do not practice your righteousness in front of men to be seen by them. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. Christ came back and went on a mount again, kind of like Mount Sinai. It wasn't so high. And he began to preach, if you are God's people, this is what you love. This is God's manifestation of what should be different about you. This is true righteousness. You've heard that it was said, thou shalt not commit murder, but I say to you, everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty. So the Pharisees had distorted. The Pharisees, who are a category of people that I'm going to talk about in just a moment, the Pharisees had distorted true righteousness as simply and possibly only outward moral behavior, moralism and religionism, because of what I do and what religion